also want Alaskans to know, that Eastside Setnetter to know, that we are deeply concerned about them as an Alaskan, and we'll take every measure we can to assure they can make a living.
Governor Parnell addresses the salmon fishery closure. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a man escapes a gunman along the Seward Highway.
He actually texted family, and then we were able to make phone contact with him when he got into phone range.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Meridian Management, specializing in coordination and management of all phases of construction projects from vision to completion, working to ensure that your project is on time and on budget. More at MeridianAK.com.
Nearly 200 commercial setnet fishermen from the east side of Cook Inlet gathered today with their families to rally support for a change in the policies that have allowed just 3 days of fishing so far this year. From KDLL, Shaylin Cochran has the story.
The rally in Kenai Friday came just hours after Governor Sean Parnell and Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell addressed the statewide problem of record low returns of king salmon and the far-reaching economic effects of preserving those fisheries. Here's Parnell's message to setnetters on the Kenai Peninsula.
I hear you, and I am sorry that you are experiencing this downturn. This is not something that anybody would wish on anyone, but I also want Alaskans to know, that Eastside Setnetter to know, that we are deeply concerned about them as an Alaskan, and we'll take every measure we can to assure they can make a living.
Todd Smith is a third-generation Eastside Setnetter.
That's beside the point, really. They should be managing the fish. And we were upset at the beginning that you know, they're saying, okay, the king numbers aren't high enough, but yet they're still fishing them on the river. And now they're saying, well, the king numbers aren't high enough, so we're going to let the reds just escape into the river and over-escape the river. And the biologists know that they've told us that, you know, sustained over-escapement is going to damage future runs. And we see our industry being hamstrung now and into the future because we're probably not going to have good returns if they overescape the river again.
Smith was one of some 200 setnetters gathered in the park in Kenai who took turns addressing colleagues in the crowd about why they're not fishing right now. Chris Every, another in a long line of setnetters in his family, raised the concern of accurate numbers on which to base management policy.
All this is over 1,900 kings, people. They have been fishing on the river since May, catching and releasing. You go to the fishing game right now and you ask the sports division guy how many kings have been harvested. I don't know, but it seems like they always know our numbers. We need to get to know theirs.
Putting a focus on science rather than politics and developing effective policy was a common theme during the rally, despite the fact that some have questions about the validity of the data being collected by Fish and Game as they continue a transition to a new in-river radar counter. To that end, Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell stated during the morning's press conference that they would be stepping up efforts to conduct research that could ostensibly be put to use in developing more equitable management policies.
Within the department, as I said, we're also reaching out to federal agencies and other scientists to make it a collaborative process. They've been meeting and talking throughout the summer because the direction was given as soon as it became clear to us how difficult 2012 was going to be. The direction was given to begin meeting and talking about what type of a planning process could be developed.
Invitations to the rally were put out for local political leaders to attend, and many did, including former Lieutenant Governor Lauren Lehman, whose family has been setnetting since 1959.
You know, we just need to change the board. The problem isn't, in my opinion, isn't most people in Fish and Game. They're implementing a bad policy. We need to change the Board of Fisheries and reclaim this fishery and get it managed properly. Good to be with you.
But nearly every speaker had the same message: get together and make that message heard. Brent Johnson is a commercial fisherman and a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, and said the fishermen need to lobby the governor and others with specific policy goals.
If enough sockeye get by the drifters and get to the beaches, we want the governor, we want the commissioner to already have instructed Pat Shields.
Pat Shields is the commercial fisheries area biologist in Soldotna.
To open set netting again, and that is the only scenario that we get back in the water this year. That's the message for this year.
For next year, he says the message needs to be that the current management plan isn't working for the hundreds of people who haven't been able to fish this year. While fisheries managers are struggling to get more kings into the river, Friday they also announced increased bag limits for sport sockeye fishing to 6 per day and announced that the Kenai personal use dip net fishery would be opened around the clock through the end of the season. From Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
The Seward Highway has been reopened, though the suspect in an alleged armed kidnapping this morning remains at large. Anchorage Police Department spokesperson Dave Parker says APD and state troopers have suspended the search for the suspect in the Turnagain Pass area of the Seward Highway, but are continuing to pursue leads in the ongoing investigation. The suspect was discovered rummaging around in the backyard of the victim's grandmother's South Anchorage home, at which point the suspect allegedly forced the victim into his own pickup truck at gunpoint. According to Parker, the suspect made the victim drive south down the Seward Highway.
When they reached the Turnagain Pass area, the suspect, who was a white male adult, about 200 pounds, probably in the neighborhood of 6 feet, with a shaved head and a black and red tattoo on his left shoulder, needed to answer nature's call. So he had the victim stop and the suspect got out of the vehicle and to relieve himself in the woods, taking the key from the ignition.
But Parker says the victim had a spare key hidden in the car and was able to drive away while the suspect was out of the vehicle. The victim then alerted authorities soon after.
He actually texted family, and then we were able to make phone contact with him when he got into phone range.
Parker says APD was assisted by state troopers, helicopters, and canine units in the search. It is believed that the suspect is armed, and police are urging motorists to not pick up any hitchhikers in the Turnagain Arm area. Investigators are taking a closer look at the airplane crash on Beluga Lake in Homer that killed former State Representative Cheryl Hines this last week. Earlier this week, officials with the National Transportation Safety Board released a preliminary report on the accident. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has the story.
Although the two-page report from the National Transportation Safety Board is only a preliminary report, it's already clear that wind gusts likely played a large part in last week's fatal accident on Beluga Lake. The plane's pilot, Joe Griffith, told NTSB investigators that his approach to Beluga Lake was normal, but the turbulence picked up as he descended. He says that just after touchdown on the lake, a gust of wind lifted the left wing, forcing the right wing to strike the water. The airplane then flipped over sharply, and the cabin began to quickly fill with water. Griffith and three other passengers were able to escape the sinking plane, but Hines was not. The passengers made repeated attempts to free Hines from her seat, according to the report, but the airplane's flaps were blocking the door. Once rescuers arrived on the scene, they were able to free her. Hines died soon after as she was being prepared for transfer to an Anchorage hospital. Clint Johnson is an investigator for the NTSB in Anchorage.
We had the airplane shipped back to Anchorage here, and probably in the next couple of weeks, they'll be convening with an engineer from Cessna. Also, an investigator from TCM, which is the engine manufacturer, and most likely also a survival factors investigator from our Washington, D.C. office. That will probably be taking place, like I say, within the next few weeks.
The NTSB's final report on the accident should be released in 6 to 9 months. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, using nature as a classroom.
And that whale came up right in front of us. And we were in the kayak, and it just came up so gracefully and went down so gracefully. And Allie was just like, oh, did you see it?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The local Elks Lodge needs your help. Why? Because the need to assist the youth and veterans in our community is greater than the available resources. If you were involved in your local Elks Lodge in the past, consider becoming involved again. Contact your local Elks Lodge and see how easy it is to become reinstated. Information at elks.org. Elks care, Elks share. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Elks Association.
The first output from a newly established legislative committee was put online this week as members of the House Fiscal Policy Committee kept a commitment to try to let the public know more about state finances. The results are at alaskabudget.com website, and it goes through the basics of the state's fiscal picture, a first look for many on where state revenue comes from, where it goes, and where money has been set aside. The committee's legislative mandate calls on the members to, quote, make recommendations to ensure a sound fiscal future. Anchorage Republican Anna Faircloth, who chairs the committee, says the goal is to get as many Alaskans as possible involved in the state's conversation about the budget. She says the committee members are looking for feedback from the public.
We certainly don't want to provide scare tactics, which I've heard out there, or that we're good for the next, two decades because we've got plenty of money in savings. You know, that's not the purpose. The purpose is, this is what our economy historically has been based on, and let's talk about what we want our future based on.
She says the website was designed to avoid being partisan or to promote any individual agenda. As an example, while the site is based on a presumption of the negative effects of oil production declines, it does not promote a change in the state's tax regime as the solution. Anchorage Democrat Chris Tuck, a member of the special committee, says the website was designed to elevate budget discussions when the committee starts its work on trying to devise a plan for the future.
If you're trying to come up with ideas and people don't really have an understanding of how it works, you're going to be spending a lot of time bringing everybody up to speed. So this is our attempt to create what we call a meeting in the box where anyone can take the materials, take the package, take the exercises, get a group of people together, walk them through it, and everyone at the end will have a better understanding.
Faircloth says the committee is not scheduled to meet before the start of the next session in January. However, the material is available for the public to study and comment on immediately. Regional Advisory Councils, or RACs, have criticized the Federal Subsistence Board for not giving their recommendations enough weight. At their meeting Wednesday, board members worked to give due deference to the input of one RAC. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has the story.
The issue of how to handle Regional Advisory Council, or RAC, recommendations arose over a request by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that the Federal Subsistence Board delegate authority to the manager of the Kenai Wildlife Refuge to close moose harvests in certain areas as needed for conservation reasons. As it is now, if the manager becomes concerned about potential over-harvesting in an area, he can either close the entire harvest or submit a special action request to the Subsistence Board, a step that involves staff, RAC, and state review, then board action. When Fish and Wildlife put the request for a delegation of authority before the South Central RAC in March, RAC Chairman Ralph Losey said the council didn't need to take action because he said it has never opposed moves to close harvests for conservation purposes. At the Federal Subsistence Board meeting, member Bud Cribley, state director of the Bureau of Land Management, said he would prefer Fish and Wildlife make any needed changes to the harvest through special action requests to give the RAC time to make an official recommendation.
Let the RAC come back to us with something formal. It's been a criticism when I've been out at the RAC meetings in the past, not so much right now, but I don't want to leave the impression that we're not listening to what the RACs have to say or give them the opportunity to say.
Others said a special action request would take too long, given the relatively fragile state of the moose population on the Kenai Peninsula. Jerry Berg is interagency staff committee member for the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Conservation concerns related to the moose populations on the Kenai have heightened in recent years due to extremely low bull-cow ratios.
A low bull-cow ratio leads to cows being bred late and bearing smaller calves later in the season, which affects calf survival. Historically, on parts of the Kenai Peninsula, the bull-to-cow ratio has been as high as 60 or 70 bulls to 100 cows. Fish and Wildlife Service would like to see it at 30 to 100. The bull-to-cow ratio is now down to 10 to 100. To get the population back in better shape quickly, last year the harvest was cut by 92% from 395 to 32 moose, and only four of those moose went to subsistence users. Still, given losses due to cold temperatures and deep snow last winter, refuge manager Andy Loringer says he doesn't expect moose numbers to rebound quickly.
I believe that we are going to be in a period of transition and needing to respond to conservation concerns on Kenai moose, beyond this season.
The Federal Subsistence Board is made up of federal land managers and subsistence users. While it's not a member of the board, the state of Alaska has a seat at the table and offers comments. Jennifer Juhas is assistant director in the Division of Commercial Fishing in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and leader of the state's subsistence liaison team. She offered this suggestion to Fish and Wildlife Regional Director Jeffrey Haskett.
You've already made an amendment, Mr. Haskett, to portions of this, and the state would ask if you'd be willing to make that a temporary delegation rather than one that's in perpetuity for all future refuge managers.
The board voted unanimously to delegate authority to the Kenai Wildlife Refuge Manager with a provision that if the RAC, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, or tribes object to the delegation of authority, Fish and Wildlife would revise or revoke the measure at the board's January meeting. In Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Fairbanks police say the death of a 12-year-old boy by gunshot was an apparent accident. Malik Boykins on Wednesday was visiting a home near Fort Wainwright when he was hit in the head by a bullet from a .40-caliber handgun fired by another 12-year-old boy who lives at the home. No adults were home during the incident. Police say they don't plan to forward criminal charges against any adults. However, spokesman Peyton Meredith says the department is working with the juvenile justice system on possible charges against the boy who fired the gun. The second boy's name has not been released, and juvenile proceedings are not made public.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. For thousands of years, the coastal residents of Arctic Alaska have depended on the polar bear for sustenance, utilitarian, and spiritual purposes. The Alaska Nanook Commission was formed to ensure that current and future Alaska Native subsistence hunters will be able to continue to harvest this important resource. The Alaska Nanook Commission, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, would like to hear from subsistence polar bear hunters. Learn more at AlaskaNanookCommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at AlaskaPublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Sarah Chicksaw. This week on AK, homeschooling. In the tiny and remote communities of southern Baranof Island in southeast, there aren't enough kids for school, so parents have to homeschool. And both the parents and the kids try to strike a balance between a more traditional education of reading, writing, and arithmetic with a more creative approach. Diana Saverin has the story.
I can tell you where I find all the fish and stuff. Also, sometimes I net them. Sometimes I net the pinks out here, and most of the fish I find under rocks.
That's Allison. She is 6 years old with a couple of missing bottom teeth and straggly blonde hair. She's wearing rubber boots she's pulled over her sweatpants to bounce around over the barnacles and seaweed-covered black rocks of her backyard.
See that brown house? That's ours, and we just like, see how close it is from the water? At low tide, I come out here and have fun.
More than just a natural playground, the world of critters crawling under rocks outside Allison's doorstep is her classroom, too. After 2 years in Little Port Walter, a NOAA research site, she can identify many of the fish swimming in the Sound. Allison, her parents, and her 2-year-old brother Sean are the only year-round residents in Little Port. Her mom, Teresa Abba, serves as her teacher. Allison just finished a year of homeschooled kindergarten. And because of her unusual home, Teresa says her curriculum includes some unusual lessons.
Like 3 weeks ago, we went out to pick some kelp. We were making kelp salsa. And Allie's like, oh, I hear a whale. I'm like, oh, great. And it came closer and closer, and I could hear it, but I couldn't see it. And that whale came up right in front of us. And we were in the kayak, and it just came up so gracefully and went down so gracefully. And Allie was just like, oh, did you see it? I'm like, oh, yeah, did you see it? You know, I mean, to experience stuff like that with your kids is fantastic.
And even though these experiences enrich and expand Allie's world, giving her an undeniably unique education, there are more serious lessons she has to learn as well. The state allows Teresa certain freedoms, a budget to choose textbooks and curricula, under the condition that she submit work for review every quarter. And Allie also has to pass annual state testing. Some of these required lessons can seem a little obscure.
And she's learning stuff that I don't even know. Like, I don't know what a diphthong is. Do you know what a diphthong is?
A mile south of Little Port is the hatchery site Port Armstrong, where Dasha Contag has homeschooled her 2 daughters into high school. Dasha has found it challenging trying to relearn, then teach, subjects she hasn't thought about since her own school days, like geometry and algebra.
It's fun when they're little. Then they get older. Well, then you gotta get serious.
Her girls get weighted down with the constant battles with math problems, the lack of sports programs, and the loneliness of winter in the rainiest spot in North America. But being wedged between the Tungus rainforest and a cove in the Chatham Straits allows some room for creative interpretation. Dasha's younger daughter, Ayla, a 13-year-old with pixie-cut hair with pink highlights, is responsible for a few unique neighbors along the boardwalk.
It was pretty much my idea to have goats, because I just really wanted to have my own babies to take care of, and they definitely are my babies. When I decided that I would have goats, I read about 2 books on taking care of them. I just kept thinking about goats and what I would do for them.
With respective year-round populations of 4 and 11 people, Little Port Walter and Port Armstrong produce some unique child-rearing challenges. Dasha explains.
Went through a little phase with Ayla where I was worried that her best friends were going to be goats and ducks, but she outgrew it.
Both moms say teaching their children has given them a strong sense of purpose, but they also talk about the challenges, especially in the dark and lonely days of winter. They wear the mom hat and the teacher hat and the discipliner hat and the friend hat.
I'm like the everything, you know. When you live in town, kids go to school generally, or there's at least other tutors and classes and, you know, just more people around that are influential. And I'm like the biggest influence on everybody. And we all get sick of each other.
Back in Little Port Walter, Allie is watching their 8 ducks swim in a chain around the cove. Most were extras from a shipment Ayla ordered a few years back. Allie says they are her ducks, telling stories of each one and how she has raised them from chicks over the year, promising what good care she takes of them. She's picked up a few lessons from them, too.
I kind of learned some stuff from my ducks. Want to hear this quack? I learned it from my ducks, too. Sounds really like a duck.
For AK, this is Diana Savran.
Instead of heading to a village this week, we're going to visit the Gakona Lodge. The historic roadhouse is located in the Copper River Valley and was established in the early 1900s for travelers on the Eagle Valdez Trail.
My name is Greg Marshall, and my wife Valerie and I own and operate Gakona Lodge, which is one of the 2 or 3 remaining original roadhouses left in Alaska. It's a National Historic Site. We operate a bed and breakfast style lodge and cabins and a restaurant and a tavern, and we guide fishing. Well, my wife and I have been married since we were 18 years old. We have 5 children, and we're from Wyoming, and we found it on the internet. I'm a CPA in my other world, and We wanted to do something with our family, and we found it on the internet, flew up here and bought it. Never been to Alaska before, and we've been up here 10 years now, so it's worked out fine. The summer has been interesting. We've had a lot of moisture, and thus the rivers have not been very fishable. We've had to cancel a lot of trips, as we want people to catch fish. We're pretty honest about whether you're going to catch a fish or not, and so we've discouraged a lot of fishing up here. The salmon count's been phenomenal up here, as most people have read in the newspapers. The kings are struggling. People aren't catching the kings and the fish wheels as we're used to, and so thus the rivers being muddy and the kings not being in, we haven't been able to fish as much as we've wanted to. Our guests come from, we get a lot of Germans, a lot of Israelis, all over Europe. We've had a lot of British here this summer. We get a lot of pipeline guys that come and stay with us. We're fortunate in that regard. And just all over the world, pretty much. These roadhouses used to be about every 15 to 20 miles, and because of electrical problems and various things, we've lost a lot of them to fire, we've lost a lot of them to just tourism and people traveling farther distances without stopping. But it's pretty fun. It's a fun place. It's crooked. There's nothing level. There's nothing square. But we enjoy it.
Greg Marshall and his wife Valerie own the Gakona Lodge. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Diana Saverin, Pat Yak, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Sarah Chicksaw.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage. Sarah Chicksaw was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau, and Steve Heimel and Josh Edge from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. As long as there are veterans, the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks will never forget them. Throughout the year, Elks members in your community lend a hand, donate money, and volunteer time. It's not something they feel they have to do, it's something they want to do. Join with America's veterans in saluting the efforts of your local Elks Lodge. Information at elks.org. Elks care, Elks share. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Elks Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.